We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. It is Wednesday. That means Wednesdays with Wiggy. I'm in here. I can't listen. I can see that you're demanding some apology, but I don't know what for.
Oh, here we go.
Because I can't listen to it
here
in here.
Here we go. What do you got?
I always want the apology. So, Dale, I listen to you. You're like my source on the streets, right?
Uh-huh.
So I listened to you on the Gronkowski thing when he was coming back, and I was all in on that one.
Yeah.
And then I heard you talking about the reseeding in with Tampa Bay.
I made a mistake. I apologize.
And I'm like, we get Columbus.
I apologize to you 1,000 times, Wiggy. Is that okay?
I don't know if that's sincere.
It's not a bit. I screwed up. I mean,
can I get a little more? No,
Wiggy,
sincerity?
I heard you yesterday afternoon with Lou Maloney sounding like a fool about hockey line company.
Are you going to address the reseeding here for the first?
I just said I screwed up. Right. I already said that.
But you tried to move on pretty quickly.
Right. Well,
I thought we could live in it.
I just said I'm not going to apologize.
Well, why not? Apologies?
Why not? Yeah, that's not an apology. He's attacking you, is what it sounds like.
Except right, it sounds like you get defensive.
Right, that's what Jerry says we're supposed to do.
Well, don't listen to Jerry. Don't listen to Jerry.
Never mind.
Jerry's a grouchy old man.
Yeah, don't listen to him.
I want my apology.
Yeah.
Like a nice one.
Oh, screw off.
He wants his apology.
What kind of...
I want my apology.
Why not?
Why do I owe you an apology? Because I screwed up?
You sent him in the wrong direction.
You're my hockey guy.
Right.
Right? So...
And I made a mistake. It'll be so frustrating for Bruins fans if that happens.
Toronto-Columbus in the next round?
Yeah, Toronto-Columbus in round two. Although I'm not sure it would be... Toronto Columbus because it's
do they reseed?
Yes.
Oh.
So it might be the Caps.
So I went and see Hellboy, and before I saw I asked Rich Keefe.
Yeah. It's okay to move on there.
I'm not moving on. Hellboy review on Dork Podcast right now. Go ahead.
I'm not moving on. I'm just showing you the direction of how it all comes together.
It does.
And Rich was like, it's not a good movie. So he gave
me... He told you that, yes.
Yes, he told me that. I go to him for his expertise on this.
Thank you.
The same way I came to you for my expertise on the Bruins, and I'm thinking, all right, Tampa Bay gets swept. Everybody's calling them the Golden State of the NHL.
And they were.
Now the Bruins, all they got to do is get by Toronto, and then boom, sweet drive into the Stanley Cup Finals because it was Columbus.
Although I do have to say, Columbus looks really good right now, don't they?
They do, but
they just not only did they sweep Tampa Bay, they kind of slapped them around.
Well, can I get an apology before?
No,
we go on?
Stupid.
I guess it's not happening. Not on this.
It's very difficult. I could see this relationship.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Does he ever apologize?
Wait a minute. No. You've wished me dead.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Several occasions, have you apologized once for wishing I would die so that you could have my gig?
I didn't wish you dead. I was asked who would die first.
Oh no, you also wished me dead.
And then I wish you dead. I might have said
two or three times.
I think I said I would kill you if we had a purge.
Oh, well, there you go. That's better.
I was wrong.
But it wouldn't be illegal, though, because it was the purge.
It's the purge. So, that's 24 hours.
Anything goes there. Yes. Right, 24 hours. You got to clean it up, though, by the time that's up.
But the problem is Toronto, are the Bruins even going to get out of the first round?
That's the problem.
Yes, I think
that's
they are.
Question. That's the question.
And you don't think you're a proponent, then they, because I'm against moving Pasternak off.
Oh, they got it. They got to change.
Oh no! I said yesterday I would move him off.
I don't think
Wiggy wouldn't.
No way! I don't think you can move your second.
But Pasternak has been non-existent in the series.
He's done nothing in the first three. He had one beautiful assist on the Brad Marchand goal.
Yeah, but think about that. Think about that first line he's on. I mean, Bergeron hasn't done much.
Right. Right. So you shuffle to the deck
a little bit.
Okay. So you need more what? You need more scoring. Well, so why not put the better offensive player with Pasta? Why not move Krejci up to the first line?
I'd rather have Krejci center. I want him to center.
All right. So help me out here.
I'm just asking the question.
No. I'm trying to figure out. So you want Krejci and Pasta together, but you want to call it the first line.
No, I would still keep Marchand on that line. Put Krejci at center.
Four-man line.
No, let Bergeron center the second line. Let Krejci center the first line between Marchand and Pasta. If that's what you want is more offense.
No, what I want is two well-balanced lines, and what you're suggesting sort of flies
so
in the
you
face
think
the, of that.
I would leave
Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak together.
That's what I'm all for.
If that's what I was going to do, but now you're talking about switching Bergeron and Krejci.
No, I had said don't touch the lines, and I know it was Glenn and Lou's thing. Move this guy around. I'm like, you don't move your second best player off the line. He's built this cohesion with that first line. He's been on, you know, and
they've done this a lot this year, right?
But it's
they've
put
Pastrnak with Krejci on a number of occasions.
But still, listen, I reached out to some of my good hockey buddies, Swoops and Nifty, and said, hey, what do you think of this? So I'm coming.
So you have other hockey sources besides Dale?
By the way, it's Swoop.
Yeah,
it's not Swoop. It's not Swoops.
Swoop. I put the S.
Swoop. No, well, there's no S on the
Sweeney,
L.
Sweeney.
I want you to apologize for that.
Sweeney
there's no S.
And Rick Middleton. So
no, I understand
reached
who they
out
are.
To them today.
Yeah. Nifty,
listen.
I got. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand who they are.
You didn't say Nifties.
And so they said, go ahead and shake up the lines?
No,
they said keep them together.
Keep them in. It's all about cohesion.
Yeah, but I think Bergeron and Marchand, you always keep those two guys together. And then I think Krejci needs a little bit more help. But I also think Pastrnak, I think the problem is Toronto was able to match up the guys that they wanted to shut those guys down. And if you break them up, now Babcock has to figure out, all right, am I trying to shut down Pastrnak or am I trying to shut down Marchand?
I don't think it's the line combinations. And Bruce Cassidy feels the same way as I do because he said, no, we're going to keep the lines as is. The thing about it is when you look at this series and you look at the way Toronto has been playing, it's just they've been all over the Bruins. I mean, think about this. If it wasn't for Tuukka and some of the timely saves that he's been able to make, the Bruins could easily be down 3-0 in this series. It's just when you look at...
Wait a minute. They dominated game two.
But when you...
How could they easily be down three games
to
none?
Well, there was some... Earl, when you look at that game two, right, they had one of those
goals.
No,
they came out from the drop of the puck in game two.
They were more physical in game two.
Wiggy, in game two, they dominated start to finish.
Right, because of their physicality. And Toronto had some bad... They had that bad turnover, which led to a goal. My point is this. When you look at Toronto, besides game two, they've been the more... I would say aggressive team as far as putting pressure on the Bruins throughout the game. It's like a different speed. Toronto has been all over the Bruins, and that's why...
I didn't think speed was an issue in game three.
You don't think all those turnovers that were created...
There weren't a lot of turnovers in game three.
The scoring opportunities came off of bad decisions.
Came
because,
off two power plays.
Because
two
of,
power plays
because
screw
of
ups.
Toronto putting pressure on the Bruins.
Wiggy, two power play screw-ups. Game one, I'm giving you.
Right.
Game two, the Bruins dominated. Game
because
three was
physical.
About as even as it could be.
I don't know if it was about as even. I think at times the
Wiggy,
Bruins...
with all due respect, it was a pretty even game that was decided by two power play screw-ups.
And I think when you look at game three, you look at periods in that game where Toronto was consistent throughout the whole game as far as their pressure, as far as what they were able to do against the Bruins, and it was just... The Bruins, at times, you don't know what Bruins team you're getting. The first 5 minutes of the first period, you get a good Bruins team. Then the last 5 minutes of the second period, a different Bruins team. That's all I'm saying. It's not about line combinations. It's about getting those guys going.
It seemed like in the first game they were pretty soft, which was kind of a surprise to see. And then Backes, who I don't love. Backes is not. He's been terrible all season. But he plays the last two games. He has a bad penalty in game three. But he's hopefully going to be out of the lineup tonight. But you wonder if they're going to be able to still have some of that toughness, right, in this game. Because at least he brings
that's
some of
that.
That's
how they won game two, right?
Yeah,
that's
but he wasn't the only guy bringing toughness.
No,
David Pastrnak led the team in hits.
And I heard Brick
in game two.
I heard Brick say this on Nesson, and they actually did a few things. And Glenn, Dale, you were there. There were times that Bruins players were turning down the body to play the puck. There was some good opportunities there, and it wasn't working out for them. And Brick had said that the one thing that he would have wanted more, I think it was after the first period, was the Bruins taking more of the body. And they weren't playing physical. When they don't play physical, I think you could see the difference as far as how Toronto plays their style of game.
I thought game three was about as even as it could be. I mean, in virtually every category, shots were even, scoring chances were even. The difference was two power play screw-ups, and the first one took like 12 seconds. And this idea that Austin Matthews looks like he's ready to start dominating based on a power play goal?
Well, he scored a goal. Well, maybe that's it. Maybe that sort of breaks the dam for him. I don't know. I mean, he's as good as he is, he's their third best forward, though.
You know, like Marner looks like the best player in the series. Tavares, there are times when Tavares has the puck. It almost reminds me of, and I know Carlson was a defenseman, but a couple of years ago when they played Ottawa, Carlson would do things where you're like, he's different than everybody else. And like Tavares has that same thing. Like some of his like stick handling, you're like, that's different than what everybody else
has. And you could see Tavares has had a ton of scoring opportunities. He just hasn't been able to put the puck in the back of the net.
Right.
But if you... It seems like he's had the spaces he's wanted. He's been able to do a lot of different things. And it seems like if they don't figure something out, that sooner or later that's going to break. But if you're the Bruins and you're playing and you're figuring this out, you need a win tonight. So you have to come out with that physicality. That is, I think, when the Bruins are at their best is when they're playing physical.
I thought they played physical in Game 3. You disagree.
Yeah.
I thought... Now,
me and Brick disagree too. Now,
I didn't say that they. That Brick said they passed up hits now and then.
Well,
that
mean they weren't playing physical as they
should.
Wait,
you're
be.
Taking a couple of plays and making it a whole game.
It's part of it.
It's not
those are big
game.
Plays.
Well, yeah, I understand. It's not getting us any further here. They picked up the physical play in Game 2. They continued it. Maybe not to the same extent in Game 3. Game 1 is the only game where they just looked like they didn't belong on the same ice. And it hasn't been that way since Game 1.
But do you think there was points in Game 3 where you felt like there were times in that game where I felt like they don't belong on the ice with Toronto?
There
were times in that game where it just was like Toronto was the better team. And you could clearly tell it
in Game 3?
Yeah, in Game 3.
Oh, God,
point
no.
times.
Did you watch Game 3 at all?
It was 3-1.
Did you see
it? It was 3-1 in Game 3, where and then the Bruins were able, like, think that they were able to get the Krejci goal to make it 3-2 on the power play. It was 3-1, and at some point in time in that game, I was like, hey, listen, you guys better figure this out.
And you thought they looked like they didn't belong on the same ice?
At times. You don't see that.
No, no, I did not.
Yes, it was at times. And like Brick said, that there were opportunities for you to play the body, for you to be physical. You weren't doing it. I saw Chara get knocked off the puck a couple times. I think I saw him actually get crushed on the boards. So there were
was Game 1.
Was that Game 1?
Yeah.
But there were point in times when you look at this team and you're like, man, what's going on out here? And I had thought that the Bruins were going to be able to handle the series. I thought they'd win the series in 5-6
games. I thought the big mismatch
if they win in 6, that means they were going to lose 2, right?
But I said 5, maybe 6.
I didn't say 5. I said 6.
You didn't think the Bruins were the better team going into the series?
Yes, I still do.
Well, they're not showing it.
Yeah, they don't. It doesn't look like a team that can win 3 straight games against them. It doesn't feel that way.
No.
But, I mean, I'm not ruling out the series. They could win it in 7. They could ping pong back and forth here the rest of the way. That could definitely happen. I thought where the Bruins had the biggest advantage was Toronto's defensemen. And those guys really haven't been that much of a liability in this series.
They've had 2 defensemen who've played better than expected.
Yeah.
Muzzin and Zaitsev have played really well. They're part of that 5-man
group.
Didn't
expect that.
That Babcock, with last change in Toronto, has been able to get out there against the Bergeron line. The rest of their defense is like what I expected they were going to be.
No, it's whatever. But like,
they give up a ton of shots because they're not that good.
Mm-hmm.
You can put pressure on their defense. Zaitsev and Muzzin have played better than they did earlier. Muzzin was the big acquisition at the trade deadline from the Kings. He's provided them a physical force. He, in particular, has physically abused David Pastrnak,
right,
which is why if you break up that line, now Babcock's got to decide, do I want Muzzin out there where Pastrnak is, which would now be with Krejci, or do I want Muzzin and Zaitsev out there with Bergeron and Marchand? Now you've got to make him make decisions.
Because I think whoever you put Bergeron or you put with Bergeron and Marchand, whoever that is, whether it's Heinen, I don't know, Johansson could be back, whoever that is, they're going to be much more impactful playing with those guys than they would with anybody else. And then the hope is that Pastrnak could get something going playing with Krejci.
Yeah, but then why wouldn't Cassidy make that move?
I have no idea.
If he's the one.
I don't think just because he starts. If he starts with them together,
but
I mean he's going to keep.
But he should have done it in the third period. They're already down a goal. They should have done it in the third period.
If you're telling me that this is what needs to happen to get Pasta going, why hasn't? And then Cassidy had come out and said that he doesn't. He has no intention.
No, he thinks his line. First of all, they are the best line in hockey. He thinks that ultimately they'll win the matchup.
Right,
and he has.
But what's so bizarre to me is he said when Pastrnak was hurt. When he fell, remember? And so he was out for a while. And I remember listening to an interview he was doing, and they asked him, like, when Pastrnak comes back, what line is he going to be on? And he said, well, it really depends on when he gets back. If he has a lot of games to go, we'll probably put him with Krejci. But if he comes back with not a lot of time, then we know that it works with Bergeron or Marchand, and we'll put him there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. So part of his thinking was, I want to balance the lines more, and I want to put him with Krejci. And maybe the timetable threw that off. So when you're down 2-1 in a series and Pastrnak hasn't gotten anything going, I don't know why you would keep doing it.
The reason they lost to Tampa Bay last year was because they had one great line. Tampa Bay shut that line down and nobody else did anything.
That was it.
That's why they lost to Tampa Bay. That's what they were trying to avoid this year. We don't want to just be a one-line team. That's why they brought Coyle in to center the third line. Mm-hmm. They thought that was going to be, and I think it's been a good move so far.
Coyle's been good.
Right.
He's been their best player, their most consistent player so far. And what they wanted to do was get a strong second line. Krejci and DeBrusque have given them two-thirds of that. The question is, if you put Pastrnak with them, now do you have two solid, consistent lines, as Keith said, no matter who the right wing is with Bergeron and Marchand?
I think those guys elevate. The Danton Heinen, for the most part, had a whatever season, nothing special. Maybe not that jump up that you thought after last year. But when he played with those guys, he fit in. And then you put him on another line. Now, this series, he's actually looked pretty good.
But I feel like when you're taking your second best player on the team and you're moving him off a line that he's had such good cohesion with throughout the whole regular season, and Cassidy had said, hey, listen, they had some opportunities. They got to get things going. They know what they need to do in reference to the first line, in reference to the Bergeron and Marchand and Pasta line. They know what they got to get going. And I think it's more that than maybe moving guys around.
But don't you think it frees him up a little bit more? Let's say Toronto decides to still put their best defense pairing and their best defensive line on Bergeron and Marchand. So now, most of the time, Pastrnak's on the ice. He doesn't have to deal with those guys that have been knocking the crap out of him.
Yeah, but
doesn't that help?
It does, but I still feel like, you know, when you move a guy off a line, it's all about, you know, it's all about cohesion with your line mates. And when you move guys off a line, it's very difficult. You know, I wasn't Bear League MVP of my men's hockey league because they bounced me around.
No, you had good synergy with the guys on the line.
And that's what you have to do, man.
Can't argue with that.
Right, no, listen, that makes sense. Telling you.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
I've seen Wiggy play at Hockey Town.
That's it. You got to have synergy, Dale.
Yeah.
Synergy with your line mates. That's what Nifty told me.
Will you get mad at me if I ask what kind of helmet you wear in hockey?
He doesn't.
No, I wear the regular hat. I wear a Jofa.
Do you?
Old school Wayne Gretzky.
Do you do the knuckle puck?
The knuckle puck?
Yeah.
What's the knuckle puck?
You never saw Mighty
Ducks?
Didn't
see Mighty Ducks?
It's been a while.
You put that puppy up on its side, then you
smack it? No, I do the...
I thought you were the biggest movie buff in the world. You never seen Mighty Ducks?
Well, I do the Youngblood. Where I kick it with my skate.
Oh, Youngblood was also very good.
I circle the puck
a few
times.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Let's get to the calls with you guys at 617-779-7937. Chris in Chelsea. Hey, Chris.
Hey, boys, how are you?
Good. What's going on?
Keith, I got to say, Keith, you know, when you first came, I didn't think you were that funny.
Thank you.
But you have developed into the number one Boston radio personality. And
wow.
Like, Pretty good.
Thank you, Chris.
Like, I really can't. I can't say like what a you know what a just an evolution that you've maintained over the last couple of years.
It's been incredible. The metamorphosis of Rich Keefe has been pretty.
It's like an actual superhero.
it's been pretty incredible. Take all the time you need, Chris.
Wiggy, I know you're new on the show and everything like that. You have to understand, in Dale Land, the Bruins have won the Stanley Cup every single year, and right now they're not down 2-1. They're up 3-0.
Okay.
Because this is what happens with Dale. He is the biggest Bruins suck-up in the history of mankind. Everything is great. Everything comes down to puck luck. It's the, like, Dale, they took penalties because they were not aggressive. When you're out of position, that's when you take a grizzly hook. And that's when you lose playoff games, when you take stupid penalties.
How many penalties did they take in the game, Chris?
I understand, Dale.
That'd be three, Chris. That'd be three minor penalties in the game, you moron.
Oh, he's not a moron. This is a great caller. This is one of the better callers we've ever had.
Very good caller.
Yeah. They swallow, everyone knows, they swallow the whistle and play off hockey, as they should.
So why were you just saying they took a bunch of dumb penalties then?
Because when you take any penalties, when games come down, because, quote-unquote, it's so even, which I don't know what game you're watching, because they're on their heels skating backwards the entire time. Somehow they're being out-physicaled by a Toronto, like, soft, light, but fast team. That should say it all, Dale. They're being outclassed They have a goalie who's one of the softest athletes in the history of Boston sports, who you will defend to your dying day. You cannot win a
cup. Which, as Wiggy would say, is not far off.
Can you win a round with Rask? Yes. Can you win 6-5 games? Yes. But you never win 2-1 grinder games with Tuukka Rask and with his defensive core, who's as soft as can be, including Grizzlies, including McAvoy, who are puck-moving defensemen, but have absolutely no heaviness on the pucks. Dale, wake up.
Wow. Hey, he does make a good
what
point.
A call. Dale, holy smokes, start to finish.
Which one did he make that was good?
All of them.
All of them were great. I forget which goal it was where Krug gets knocked off the puck, and then he's in front of the net, and rather putting a body on the guy and clearing him out of there, I forget who it was, but ends up getting the goal right on the doorstep.
In three games, the Bruins have been outscored 8-7.
Mm-hmm.
They've been outclassed.
I think they
don't look like they belong on the same ice. They've been outscored eight to seven on the same ice. Chris the moron did.
At times in this series, they do look like they've been outclassed.
They've looked like they've outclassed Toronto.
But it's not as much as Toronto has done to them.
Oh, for God's sakes, Wiggy. 8-7. How big a difference is there in this?
If you watch the series, who looks like the better team throughout the three games of this series?
Toronto. Well, you'd say Toronto's got a 2-1 lead, so they look like the better team.
Regardless of the team.
They won a game on home ice, 3-2. And they lead 2-1.
Throughout the game, the Bruins are making it's a lot of sloppy plays out there. Toronto,
especially by the first line, which you don't want to break up.
Toronto looks like besides game two, they look like the more physical. They look like the more physical team, and it just looks like when you watch this game, throughout the entirety of this series, Toronto looks like the better team. More physical.
Then Tuukka must be playing his ass off.
Tuukka is playing his ass off. I put nothing on Tuukka. I think Tuukka has done
a great job.
Think about how many breakaways he stopped in this series because of poor play,
right,
and a couple shorthanded breakaways.
Yeah, they've not helped him out at all.
No.
Yeah, it's not been a Tuukka problem.
Yeah, and when you look at this series, I think it's more about the way that they're playing than about the line combinations. And they better pick it up tonight. Because if they don't, see you later.
You know their biggest problem in game three was that line you don't want to break up.
That was their biggest problem
in game three.
It might be the biggest problem in the series if you look at expectations for them. Because the other guys you're not relying on.
But you just said, Dale, two of those goals, power plays, right? One of those goals on the power play, Bergeron had the puck on
the stick.
Did
you see how that top line looked when they had the power play?
They were awful. But I'm talking about the goals that Toronto scored. Bergeron had an opportunity to clear the puck. He had the puck on his stick on the PK. He didn't clear it. That led to a goal. So it wasn't about necessarily what Pasta did wrong. It's about the way that they've been playing.
617-779-7937. We'll talk to Taylor Twellman at about 11:45 about Junior Seau and the 30 for 30 that ran last night. But Keefe's got a trending now coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bruins have what is called an optional skate this morning. It looks right now, according to Bruce Cassidy, that both Marcus Johansson and John Moore will return to the lineup tonight. According to Bruce Cassidy, it could be Kuhlman who comes out of the lineup for Johansson, not David Backes.
Are you surprised by that?
I mean, not that Kuhlman's
lighting the world on fire, but I feel like, what does Backes, what does he do for you?
So Kampfer will come out, and he'll be replaced by John Moore.
That's fine.
Johansson, assuming he goes in, and Cassidy said right now it looks like that's going to be the case. So Carson Kuhlman will come out. David Backes will stay in the lineup tonight. Going back to Wiggy's point about, physical presence, perhaps they feel that they need Backes in there just for that That one intangible alone.
Yeah, as long as he's not committing penalties, stupid penalties, yeah, and allowing, you know, power play goals. So, yeah, I mean, that's fine. That's kind of a wash. I mean, you're slightly better defensively. When was the last time John Moore played?
Yeah, he's been out for a little while. And, yeah, and it's a real good addition for them to be able, right, to get him back.
Right.
Kevin Miller's not ready to come back yet, but he's getting closer, I, mm-hmm, think. The other thing is, for Game 5 on Friday, there's the thought that perhaps Sean Corrali could return. And then you've got your fourth line back together, which at the end of the regular season, until Corrali got hurt, Cassidy was using as the checking line against the other team's top lines.
Right, and they basically became the third line, but, too, the way they were playing. They were almost they got a good amount of ice time, and they actually had some scoring chances.
But do you think that makes the difference? No,
I mean, it's an improvement. I mean, Johansson's definitely, whether it's Kuhlman or Backes coming out, Johansson's better.
Don't you think that it's more about when...
And he wasn't out because he was hurt. He was out because he was sick.
Well, right, you think that it's more about when they come out? When you look at this Bruins team, it's about them imposing their will and doing that by being physical.
Oh, they have no excuses. It's not like, you know, Tampa playing game three without Kucherov or, mm-hmm, like some of the guys that they miss in their series. All their best players have, right, been there. Like, their most important guys have all been on the ice. So,
and Tuukka has been playing
well. He's
been
fine. He's been fine.
So, and that, you know, that's things that, you know, people have kind of been concerned about in the past. But you look at him through the first three games, he's been relatively good.
Yeah.
And you got to think, okay, all right, what's going on here? And I'm not, like I said, I'm not moving lines, and Cassidy's the same way. I just think,
although that, he said he's going to start the game, mm-hmm, with that line together. His words, but that could change quickly.
You know, two shifts and they're not getting any shots or anything. Like, who knows? Maybe he decides to change things up.
The stats site, Boston Sports Info, has got just an incredible stat here. The Boston Bruins record in the playoffs, this is just Patrice Bergeron. When he's got a plus-minus of one or less, minus one or worse, they're 6-21. When he's even, they're 24-22. When he's plus one or better, they're 33-9.
Yeah.
Patrice Bergeron is the guy who he's the engine. He's the motor that runs this thing. And David Pastrnak's not playing great at the moment, and Brad Marchand's not getting the opportunities, but it's Bergeron who ultimately decides whether this team wins or loses.
I mean, that stat alone is more of an argument to keep Pastrnak on his line, right? Like, give, right, him all the firepower, right, he can have. But I still think they're better off breaking it up.
See, I feel like that when you're talking about postseason, you're talking about playoff hockey, it's one thing to move guys around in the regular season, but in the playoffs, because you're talking about condensed games, you know, you're only playing 7-game series, things happen quickly, it's about cohesion. If you move guys around, now maybe he goes down in that second line and he's not able to get things going.
But he's not getting anything going right now.
Right, but
that's why I would
he
give
has
it
a better chance of getting things going with a line that he's used to being on than a line he's not used to being on.
I mean, maybe, but you can't wait too long and then all of a sudden you're gone. You're like, hey, I thought you guys were going to be able to snap out of
but
it, and now we're out.
But if you're going
to
do that,
You can't take a chance on falling down 3-1.
I don't think so.
Because you were late pulling the trigger.
So say you move him, and it really doesn't do anything. Now do you go, oh, wait, we have to figure out what we need to do to move somebody else?
Well, and I know I talked to Lou about this yesterday. He had a real good point. Would you consider moving Pastrnak off that line tonight? Because in Toronto, Mike Babcock gets last change. Mm-hmm. He can dictate the matchups. Then when you come home Friday night, do you put the line back together? Because then Cassidy can dictate the matchups.
Depending on how good it looks. Like, say you make the change and it clicks in, then why would I change it back?
Right.
Like, if you win, then I would just keep
and
that going.
How do you think he as a player is you know, mentally going from one line to the other line, back to one line?
I think they can handle it. I think that's overstated.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I think they could do that. It's not like he's never played with Krejci before.
No, I know. I understand that.
And like maybe they have success. And it's not like you go from, it's not like basketball where you're like starting lineup, now you're off the bench and maybe, right, a guy mentally, like, you're just out. They don't even start line all the time.
It's about like playing with guys and you know what they do, right?
Yeah.
What they do well. And when you're talking about guys that, you know, when you think of Pastor, right, you think of him being that kind of elite goal scorer, right? So
yeah,
you want to make sure that he is playing with a guy that can put him in good positions, could set him up, that kind of thing. And if he's been playing well all year long, he's kind of struggling it right now in the playoffs. I don't know if you move him and then that necessarily is going to be the thing that kind of gets it going. I think it's about maybe Cassidy saying to these guys, that first line, hey, you guys need to pick it up.
We told you guys that stuff would leak out throughout the course of the day. Evan Lazar was first to report it. Jeff Howe has now reported it as well. The Patriots will open that Sunday night football game at home against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Ooh, Steelers.
Huh.
All right.
Okay.
We think we know the Cleveland Browns matchup, which will be a Sunday night football game in October. By the time you get to the schedule release at 8 o'clock tonight, you'll know most of it.
All of it. And the whole thing
will
be
Chiefs,
out.
Too. The Chief was another possible.
Yeah, people thought Cowboys,
I don't mind the Pittsburgh
Steelers.
Thing. Yeah.
New look Steelers.
Yeah, you get to see what
Antonio.
You kind of get to see what they look like a little bit of kind of right out of the gate. You get a little idea of what this Pittsburgh Steelers team is going to be because they're one of the teams that has always kind of threatened you in the AFC.
Not bad. Not bad.
So kind of see what they're able to do.
At least they didn't throw an AFC East team at you, force that down first.
Like a Miami?
Yeah, like no thanks.
So we now think we know two of the Patriots' home dates. We know that they open against Pittsburgh, if these reports are right. And we know that they host the Cleveland Browns for Sunday Night Football on October 27th.
And if you could only go to one game, it'd be the Browns. Everybody wants to see the Browns.
October 27th, right? What game?
Halloween, the cheerleaders will be in the Halloween outfits.
What game would that be?
How could you do better?
You can't.
What game is usually that?
October?
October 4. That's like game 7 around it.
7-8-9.
I mean, Cleveland could really, by that time, they could be...
Undefeated.
No. They can.
No, you don't think so?
You're not buying in on Baker Mayfield? No, I'm not buying in on
Odell
that.
Beckham, Jarvis Landry, best wide receiver duo
depending
in the league.
Depending on where the bye week falls, it'll either be game 7 or game 8.
Right, and that bridge could have been burnt. That bridge could have burnt down by that time.
No, Cleveland's going to be good.
This thing's going to fall apart. Because
of the coach?
It's not the coach.
I have no idea if
it's
the coach
not just the coach, but you think about it. It's about personalities, right?
Yeah, they're best friends. Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry are best buds.
Right.
They're going to thrive together.
They're best friends.
Best buds.
They are best
friends. High school.
Listen.
Before high school.
Two wide receivers.
Yes.
Divas are best friends.
Well, you said divas.
All right, two wide receivers.
Those guys are good guys.
All right, two wide receivers are best friends. Yeah. What do the wide receivers want more than anything else?
They want to win.
They want the football first.
No, I understand.
And they got
they're going to get it.
They got a young gun. Quarterback that really doesn't care.
Baker's going to sling it to both of them.
I could see
both guys will have over 90 catches.
I could see by the time they're playing the Patriots, both of those guys yelling and screaming in each one of a Baker Mayfield's ear, get me the damn football.
But hey, if Odell scores a touchdown, you don't think Jarvis Landry will be happy for him and vice versa?
I think, of course, they'll be
they
happy.
They will. But those guys will.
There's going to come a point in time where one of them's got to be the alpha dog. Right? Mm-hmm. And it's what it is. Somebody's got to be Baker Mayfield's go-to guy.
But what about like Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin were an unbelievable wide receiver duo.
Fitzgerald was the alpha dog.
All right, but Boldin was still very, very good.
But he was the go-to guy, and the personalities were completely different. Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin, two guys that really, especially with Fitzgerald, personalities weren't a huge thing. We've seen Odell back. We know Jarvis Landry.
Odell's matured.
Okay.
He's matured. He's an older player now. He's going to get all the downfield stuff. Jarvis Landry's going to get all the short stuff in the middle of the field. Yeah. They're going to complement each other perfectly.
I'm telling you.
And they got Nick Chubb, your Georgia guy.
They got
Kareem Hunt showing up week 8. Will Kareem Hunt be there for that? If it's week 8, no, he won't be. So the Patriots won't have to face Hunt.
He's the first 8 games?
Yeah, he's out of games.
You got Nduku, the tight end.
He's good.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Nice team. Is Myles Garrett on defense?
There's not enough balls to go around.
Oh, there's plenty.
Unless guys can say, you know what, I'm willing to take a backseat.
Beckham and Landry will both have over 1,000 yards this year. They'll both have 90 catches. Odell will have double-digit touchdowns. Landry will have
seven. Well, that means that they're only going to two guys.
No, you just said Njoku and then the running back.
If you're saying that they're...
But Baker Mayfield's going to throw for 4,000-something yards. So they each have 1,000. There's still 2,000 more yards to be thrown around.
But you think they'll just be at 1,000? How many balls are they catching?
Even if it's 1,500 or whatever.
How many balls are they catching?
90 plus.
That's what I'm saying. Not
each
enough balls to go around.
Oh, yes,
and young
is.
Coach, I'm telling you, Baker Mayfield don't hold his tongue for nobody.
That's true.
I guarantee you there'll be a fight on the field.
Last night on ESPN, their 30 for 30 entitled Say I'll Ran. We talked to Kirby Bradley yesterday. He was the director of it. We're going to talk to Taylor Twellman, former New England Revolution star whose career was ended by concussions and who Junior Seau sought out to try to get more information about concussions and what it had done to him and his life. Taylor Twellman joins us in just a couple of minutes. Sports Radio, WEEI.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
If you had the chance last night to see the ESPN 30 for 30 entitled Seau, well, I just said to Keith off the air, it left me sad. He seemed like such a happy, friendly, outgoing person and took his own life at far too young an age. Concussions, CTE likely led to the depression that ultimately caused him to do that. Kirby Bradley joined us yesterday. He was the director of the program. My buddy Taylor Twellman was also involved with Junior and trying to help him, and Taylor joins us right now. Taylor, how are you, bud?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, thank you. We talked to Kirby about this, but I wanted to get your side of the story. You and Junior lived in the same building. He knew that your career had come to an end because of concussion issues, and he wanted your advice. Is that how it happened?
Yeah, it's interesting, Dale. Like, it started, you know, the Patriots were on a beaten, undefeated run heading to that Super Bowl. We were on the verge of going to our fourth MLS Cup in the last 5-6 years. And so during that run, Junior and I became really close friends. We went to dinner, you know, whether it was every Monday or Tuesday night, and we just kind of just talked and became friends immediately. You know, anyone that knew Junior always had that, you know, everyone was a buddy to him, and he had that, you know, attitude and energy around him that anyone and everyone was welcome. But it was the following year, and for the Patriots fans listening, they'll remember, Junior didn't come back at the beginning part of the year. He came back, like, after 3 or 4 games, if I'm not mistaken, for that last run with Belichick and the Patriots, and I got my concussion that ultimately ended my career 2 years later. But it was that point when I saw a side that, at the time, Dale, full disclosure, I didn't know. But when he told me, as I said on the film, I've had a headache since I was 15, 16, 17 years old. He was actually asking me for help, and I just didn't realize it because I was still in the infancy of dealing with my post-concussion syndrome that I still deal with to this day.
I think one of the big surprises, Taylor, when everything came out was sort of the depression that Junior had and everything that he was dealing with, because he did have such a big personality and everybody loved him. And I think, as Kirby told us yesterday, if the NFL had a, you know, least likely to commit suicide category, it would have been Junior Seau. So with all of the conversations that you guys had, were you aware of that at all?
Rich, honestly, yes. And again, you guys are talking to me in 2019 where I'm a, you know, my knowledge of the injury and everything with living with it is exponentially more than what it was in that 2008, 2009 year, right? So, but absolutely, I then saw the dark side that, you know, very few people listening are going to believe that he confided into a soccer player, this big middle linebacker, Hall of Famer, but the reality was he did. I just didn't put two and two together. But there was a guy that would walk in, everyone, and I mean everyone, from the busboys to the people in the back room, to the cooks, to the chefs, to the, you know, most expensive people in that room. Everyone was welcomed by Junior. So when I started to tell the story behind the scenes, and quite honestly, Rich, to answer your question, I had reached out when I heard that Junior drove the car off the cliff. I had reached out, never got an answer back. But then I got an email from the family, and who knows who it was from the family. Was it actually someone from the family or someone representing the family? It's neither here nor there anymore. But the reality was he was reaching out for help, didn't know what to do, and there was a dark side. And obviously the film did a very good job of telling the full story and what the financial problems and the family issues and whatnot. But I, from afar, I just was extremely proud of how his kids handled themselves and carried it, because Junior was definitely someone that was a troubled person and let very few people know about it.
Now, Taylor, like, as somebody who's played the professional football before, the one thing that scares me the most, you know, and as I'm learning all the time, I'm learning all, you know, the different things that come with having concussions. The thing that scares me the most, and I want to ask you this as well, is the ALS. You know, I've seen guys like Steve Gleason, who I played with, and, you know, obviously Kevin Turner used to play for the Patriots, OJ Brigance. And the the connection between concussions and ALS, because that's the one thing I would say that probably scares me the most is, you know, when you see how debilitating those guys are and what ALS causes, is what is that connection? And, like, what's the thing that you, scared more than anything with dealing with concussions?
Wiggy, it's a good question, my man. And there's thousands of ex-athletes like yourself that played American football. But the problem with the discussion, Wiggy, is that it's not only you guys. It's NHL players.
Right.
It's girls that did gymnastics and equestrian. Concussions, there's no, I chuckle, there's no prerequisite on how concussions affect people. And it scares the living crap out of everybody. It absolutely does. But on the other hand, not everyone that gets a concussion commits suicide. Not everyone right. that gets a concussion gets CTE and ALS. And what Steve Gleason has done with his platform is remarkable to bring the consideration to the injury. Wiggy, I used to wake up every single day scared. And finally, I started the foundation and just talked about the injury. And I think a big part of that is Junior Seau, because here's a guy that didn't want to talk about it because he couldn't. I just think, Wiggy, if we're going to change it, right. we want sports to be played by all of our youth. There's so many values in sports. That's not what I want to change. But to think we can't evolve, that to me is the danger of this all. And that actually, Wiggy, to answer your question, scares the crap out of me.
Right.
Is that we don't take the Junior Seau stories, that we don't take all of these stories around sports and not evolve. I'm not saying abolish sports. But how do you not evolve? When
right.
we found out smoking caused cancer, we changed the rules. People are still going to smoke. That's besides our point. But if we can't evolve sports and change that for our youth when they don't have the answers, Wiggy, that's what gets the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Were you surprised when you heard that he had shot himself in the heart in his house?
No. All of my family, and even my wife, first thing I said, he shot himself in the heart because his brain's been bothering him. And Dave Durson, when these athletes are doing that, Dale, there's a reason. Because even because CTE has taken over their brain and that disease has taken over, they still have that little ray of light to say, I have an option to educate those of us that they've left behind. It did not surprise me whatsoever.
Now, Taylor, I know you can't speak for Junior, but do you think, had he known about the risks of CTE and multiple concussions and all of that, would he have still played? And I guess the same question for you. If you had known going in, hey, this is what could happen and this is what may be the long-term results, would you have done anything differently?
Rich, great question. Do I think Junior Seau would be on his soapbox right now talking about tackle football and the age limits and how to properly do it? Absolutely. Do I think he still would have played? Absolutely. And that's what I meant when I answered Wiggy's question. He would have begged for evolution and to change, but he wouldn't have gotten rid of sports. That's who he is. And that's honestly, with the headaches and the dizziness that I deal with every day, same thing, Rich. I'm still
right.
playing the game, but I'm not having our youth at 8, 9, 10, 11, and even 12, heading soccer balls repeatedly. And by the way, for those of you that are listening, Lionel Messi played yesterday, demolished Manchester United. How many times he had the ball? 0.0. So my sport can evolve more than any. We could also change the most because of boys and girls playing the sport. Rich, I would have still played, but I'm not sure I would have been heading the ball at 8, 9, 10, 11 the way I did.
Right. Taylor Twellman has put together an organization called thinktaylor.org. You can check them out for more information. If you've got concerns about maybe a youngster in your family and concussion possibilities. Taylor, we always appreciate the time, pal. Thank you very much. I know this is not the easiest day for you, and thank you for taking the time.
No, guys, great show. I love it. And keep going.
I'll talk to you soon.
See you guys.
Thanks, Taylor.
That is Taylor Twellman, who tried to help.
And I love it. Unbelievable. And Taylor's right. Like, you wouldn't have thought of that at all. Like, the connection that those guys had and Junior confiding in him so much, you wouldn't have made that connection.
I'm glad that they were able to shed light on that relationship
because the
one biggest misconception, and I fight this battle all the time when I'm talking to guys like Alex Reimer and how banned football and how football's the most dangerous sport out there. I love the fact that here's a guy in Taylor is it Twellman? Is that how you say it? Twellman.
Yeah.
Here's a guy that is advocating for the safety in soccer, a sport that, you know, most people would say, I'll have my kid play, but here's a guy who's saying,
oh, it can
hey,
happen in any sport.
Right, and but that's the thing. It's like there's this misconception that, you know, yes, football is dangerous, but this misconception that that is the sport that has to be
complete. Yeah, you won't get hurt if you do
right.
this in the fall.
And,
like,
and
well,
I think he
true.
Sheds a lot of light on it, saying, hey, listen, soccer is just as dangerous for kids of a certain age.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. You can ask Wiggy anything at noon 30. That's coming
go.
Up next Let's hour.
Go.
We get
Good.
Back to the calls with you in just a couple of minutes. Sports Radio, WEEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.